Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
As we heard earlier in the show, we have new CDC guidelines on how folks who are fully vaccinated can interact with each other. Now into the third month of vaccine eligibility, we want to check back in on a community that we have been following through this pandemic, our neighbors experiencing homelessness and housing insecurity. Lyndia Downey is the president and executive director of Pine Street Inn, the city's largest homeless shelter. She joins us on the line now. Lyndia, welcome back.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Great to have you. So we've stayed in touch. Both WBUR and Radio Boston have stayed in touch with you, Lyndia, over the last 12 months. What is the situation right now at Pine Street Inn as we enter, you know, the anniversary, sadly?
Well, I think it's a mix of optimism, you know, gratitude that we were early in on the vaccine and in phase one, and exhaustion, frankly. I think it's all three of those.
So, Lyndia, if you were going to sort of describe for us the arc of the last 12 months, both for residents at Pine Street Inn and for the experience of you and your team, you just talked about exhaustion, how would you describe that arc?
I think, you know, in the beginning, Tiziana, it was very literally putting out fires every day and trying to build that bridge while you were walking across it. You know, we were not quite sure what we were up against when we started universal testing, and the numbers were quite high. You know, we were testing in the worst months of this pandemic at 36% among the guests. Of course, that impacted our frontline staff, many of whom also tested positive. So we were trying to deal with a crisis with some days, you know, both hands tied behind our backs. The many staff were out. Even if they weren't sick, they had to quarantine. We had to very quickly find alternative space for guests that were staying in shelter. And for people who have not been to Pine Street, our shelter beds look like a big barracks. You know, the beds were maybe 2.5 feet apart. People, you know, slept next to each other very closely. People, even now, you know, eat together. People are together in the building all day. And at that point, we had over 400 men in this building and about 140 women next door at the women's shelter in a large congregate environment. So I think, you know, those months were a blur, frankly, when every single day you were trying to figure out, how do we find space for people? How do we get them out of shelter so more people don't get infected? How do we support the staff who have tested positive? You know, we had staff literally who stayed in Boston for months on end in a dorm that BU very lovely let us use because they were afraid to go home to their families. And then what we saw was the numbers start to come down because we, with Healthcare for the Homeless, have been until about a week ago doing universal testing. And that made an enormous difference because we could identify quickly who was positive. At that point, the city and state had brought up both some hotels just for people who were homeless and COVID positive, but also some alternative hotels and dorm space to get people out of shelter quickly. You know, we saw the numbers go down in the summer, just like everyone else. And then we saw this big spike in the fall after the holidays. But I will say this, even since last spring, we've been at less than 2%. So we you know,
after being at 36%.
After being at 36, yep. And right now we're hovering around 1% right now.
So Lyndy, you said up until a week ago you were doing universal testing. What changed a week ago?
Well, two things changed. One is about a month ago we started vaccines, our first round of vaccines for frontline staff and shelter guests. And our numbers, even before that, were pretty consistently below 2%. And because we have had now probably at least, you know, 3 or 4 months of those very low numbers, I think we and the public health folks and Healthcare for the Homeless thought, you know, we can go to what's called cluster testing, where you take a sample test from, you know, 20 or 30 people. And if you get a positive, then you go back. Right. That's right. And then you go back to the whole group. If you get a positive, you don't get a positive, you know, you keep doing the cluster testing. in hopes that you pick up the odd case here and there.
So, Lyndia, is there a resident, and respecting people's privacy and personal stories, is there a resident or a couple of residents who sort of make you think of the arc, who embody the arc of this experience over the last year? Is there someone whose story you can tell us a little bit about?
You know, I think there's a couple of people. You know, one of the first people here to get COVID was a fellow who has been here probably for about 4 or 5 years. Not an older fellow in his 50s, had a heart condition, had asthma, you know, heavy-set fellow, so overweight, lovely fellow who was, you know, kind of stuck in homelessness. Every time he tried to get out of here, something else happened, but very, very nice man. He was one of the first people to test positive within a couple of days, and he ended up in the hospital. He was there for about 3 weeks on a respirator and did not make it. And
oh, I'm sorry.
I think we were all so shocked. You know, we just thought he'd be back after a couple of weeks. It was early on, and I don't think we understood, you know, the severity of this disease, frankly. And also, he was young. And so we thought, oh, you know, so what that he's got a heart condition? You know, so what? There's these other things. He's young, and this is a disease that really impacts older people. Having said that, you know, we had an older fellow, he's 73 now, who tested positive late last spring, again, ended up in the hospital. And I'll guarantee you, we all thought, boy, if he comes back, we'll be shocked because he has some health issues. He walked back in here about a month and a half after he left and said, I know you all thought I wasn't coming back, but I'm okay. And can I tell you why, you know, this younger fellow didn't make it? And, you know, this older fellow who we were so worried about is fine now. And he's actually got permanent housing. He's in his own room. So it's run the gamut from just the horrible to the miraculous, frankly.
How is the vaccination process going now?
It's going quite well. Very grateful to, you know, the governor and Secretary Sutters for prioritizing homeless people, because the tools at our disposal, especially in shelter, where, you know, it's still a large congregate site, even though the numbers are obviously less than they were. The logistics have been terrific. You know, we've worked with Healthcare for the Homeless. They're doing the actual vaccine administration, but we are doing all the scheduling, we're doing the follow-up, the reminder calls, the tracking. So it's gone quite well. And, you know, we're at about 57% of our frontline eligible staff have been vaccinated, and 52% of our eligible guests have been vaccinated.
Is the goal 100%, or is it lower than that?
I think the goal is 70%. If we can get there, you know, we're seeing the same kind of resistance that other people are seeing. Some is fear that these vaccines were approved quickly and they, you know, there wasn't enough time for deep due diligence. Some is suspicion, you know, among Black and Brown people about, you know, past experiences with the healthcare system, and a lot of wait and see. I want to see how my buddy does. I want to see how my coworker does. You know, do they get really sick or just sick for a day and they're back at work? So I think it will go up, but I think it's going to be a slower process going forward.
So, Lyndia, and one of the things I want to ask you in our remaining time, what is not visible to people who are not experiencing homelessness or working with those who are, that we need to understand as other members of the community in terms of challenges, needs? What's invisible that needs to be made visible?
You know, I think the emotional toll that this homelessness takes on people to begin with, you know, just walking in here creates an enormous amount of trauma in your life. You know, it means things have pretty much fallen apart and you have no friends, family, no support system to fall back on. And I think this has magnified that feeling of just you don't have anybody and that you have so few choices left. You know, I remember talking to this young man who was in his 20s, who lost his housing because of COVID. He was couch surfing. He wasn't on the lease in this apartment and he was asked to leave. And he said to me, you know, I didn't want to come here. And I said, yeah, I know. Nobody actually wants to come to shelter. And he said, well, I didn't want to come because I was afraid I was going to get COVID. And he said, but what choice did I have? I got kicked out of the apartment. I could have stayed outside, put myself at risk outside, or put myself at risk here in shelter. And I think for those of us who have choices and who have options, it's hard for people to understand when you have no options. And then even when you try and create an option, oftentimes so many things push back on you. And I think that's homelessness was so hard before this, and it's even harder now. And people are desperate to get out of shelter in what is still a pretty expensive housing market.
So, Lindy, last question for you. How are you, your team, your residents, staying hopeful and centering around hope, given the challenges that you just laid out?
Well, listen, I will say people are tired. I think we're all collectively tired, right? The whole community, and not just us, right? The entire city's tired. And I think people are, feeling on the one hand, just it's been a year. Nobody expected it to go on this long. So I think there's just this long, it's been a long trajectory. I think people miss seeing each other on a regular basis. You just can't get your head around someone or hug someone and, have a more intimate conversation on Zoom. But there's two hope. I would say there are two hopeful things. One is, the vaccines are going quite well, and we're going to keep at it. And the day we started vaccines, it was like a little party down here. People were just elbowing and smiling and just talking to each other and just very excited about it. So it really felt like there was some light at the end of the tunnel. I think the second thing I would say is we are
Just
really,
briefly,
really
Lindia,
pushing
just
on
so you
more
know, we're
housing.
running out of time.
Yep, more
More
housing.
housing.
And that's the hopeful thing.
That's great. I'm sorry to cut you off there because that's an
That's
important
fine.
point, too. Always a joy to have you. Lindia Downey is the president and executive director of Pine Street Inn, the city's largest homeless shelter. Lindia, thank you.
Thank you.